Hi, I'm Sam Stokes. Today, let's talk about using simple functions in C#, Visual Studio 2010. All the demos will work in earlier versions of Visual Studio. This is just to kind of show you Visual Studio 2010 being used for normal work that you might encounter as a worker or student. In using functions, functions come in several flavors. In this video, we're going to take a look at functions that do not return a value. These are ones with the term void in the declaration statement, and functions that do return a value. And the remainder of this video will be in Visual Studio 2010. Visual Studio 2010, when you open it up, you can get the welcome page, which has the feeds, like earlier versions, RSS feeds. Projects, your recent projects, new projects, open solutions. So I'm going to use a new project, and then there's the Visual Studio part, MSDN library, MSDN forums, and communities. New projects. Now Visual Studio 2010 does not support Game Studio, XNA Game Studio yet. That is a feature that will be put in just before release to manufacturing. Get closer to March, you'll be able to. There'll be a version of XNA Game Studio that'll appear. For today, let's just talk about building a form that uses functions. What we're going to do today is we're going to add two labels, two text boxes, and two buttons. We'll add some code that utilizes those controls that have been placed on the forms. Now I'm going to give the name to my application, Rio Hondo Community College, because this is a talk that I gave on October 10th, 2009. I'm going to leave it in the default directory, which is in my Documents Visual Studio 10 projects. That's so I can remember where they're at. Now I could also add this to source control on CodePlex. I'm not going to do that today, but in my next presentation I will probably start using these with CodePlex so that you can see how that works. Now I'm going to click on OK. Visual Studio now builds a form for me, as well as adds the Team Solution Explorer. The Team Explorer, which we won't be using, so I'm going to close. Now the Team Explorer would be used to check in, check out, and to do code profiling. I'll click on Close, and that'll close that tab. And we also have our properties. Now if I pin this, you can see that the two can be seen at the same time. Because of the resolution of my recording, I am not able to show a lot of this because I'm using a lower resolution in my recording for this video. Now the form, I can add controls to it. Now you might be asking yourself, why are we adding controls? Why don't we just use the normal process I use in my class? And that's the process of using consoled, and I say to you, how often do you use consoled in your everyday life? And that's pretty rare. Most people expect to be able to see a form, and so I always prefer to just do it the way that your customers will likely want to see it. Now I've added a label and a text box, a second label and a second text box. I'm going to add two buttons. Now I got these under the common control in the toolbox. If you're not able to see your toolbox, you can bring it up by going View in Toolbox. Now I'm going to add a button. Notice I get some helping guidelines or guidelines over here. And I'll add another button. I'm going to widen my form out a little bit, and you'll see why in just a second, because we're going to put labeling on the buttons so that they can help guide us when we're doing our testing. In our first label, we don't want to double click on it like I just did, I'm going to go ahead and delete that. It automatically put in what's called an event. We'll discuss events later. For today, we're going to use events, but not really discuss them. I'm going to go down and change the text to my label 1. Text is not the same as the name of the control. The name of the control is used by the compiler to identify that control. It's one of the few properties that cannot be changed at runtime. However, text can be, and we'll see that in our experimentation today. So the way that we use labels is this is going to tell us that the top one is uses functions. Now you can name it, use this text in any manner that you wish. Now I'm going to close the solution by doing auto hide, and this will give me a little bit more room in my properties box to work with. So we're still on the same label, which is currently named label 1. We want to change that name of the label to label uses function. So I often use a three-letter identifier at the front of the label. This helps me identify it in programming as a label, and then something that identifies what it does. Labels, not everybody always does this with labels. I just make it a habit to do so. It makes life easier as you maintain your software. Now the second one is no function, doesn't use functions. Now you usually want to keep your name short for the name of a control, but in the text we can go a little bit longer so people can see what's going on. As you can see, the functions, the labels, work much the way that we would expect something that people would read would work. Now this one's gone a little long and it's run underneath our text box, so we want to move it over. So we get our little move thing and we move it over. Now normally, labels line up with each other, so that's why I moved the uses functions over. Now the text box, we're not going to put anything in the text yet. That would be the default value, and then the user can make changes to that. Where we are going to make the changes are here at the text box. We're going to change its name, TXT. TXT is a three-letter acronym that I use for text box, and now we'll call it functions. But we're not going to use the text. The second text box will do the same thing, and like the label, we'll call it no function. Now, click on button 1. We'll want to change the text in the button as well as the name of the button. We'll be getting to the functions shortly. Oops. And we want to name it BTN, which is short for button function. Doing the same thing with button 2. And with text, we'll say now we'll want to enlarge our button so we can see all that printing, all the words. Now you may be wondering why text and why name. In the case of localization, you may want to have doesn't use function in Spanish rather than English. Okay, if we run our code, nothing too exciting happens. The buttons look like they get clicked. We can enter stuff into the text box. but it doesn't get saved. We haven't added our code to the form. Okay. Let's add some code. Now when I double click this, and I'm going to close auto hide the properties dialog box, and now when I say txt, now notice by having txt it shows me and goes directly to the functions. This gives me some efficiencies when I'm writing code. So I'm going to choose text no function. Now this is the text box. This is the click function of the button. And we'll type in hello world. There we go. If I run this, I'll click on doesn't use function, and it entered hello world. Now let's take a look at the use of default text inside of the text box control. Now I realize this really isn't part of a function, but this is to help you see what's going on. First of all, let's go back into design and select our text box. So the second text box or text box no function. I'll put in something silly like haha. And this is the default. Now when we run our code, we'll see that when we click on the button doesn't use function, it fills in and replaces the default text. Next, we want to discuss what we really came here to do, and that's to create a function, first of all, that doesn't return a value, but uses a value, and then a function that uses a value and returns a value. Now remember, this is very simple, but once you use these complex processes, you're able to do a great deal of work. Okay. So now we have double-clicked the BTN function, and this event handler has been created for us. Now I'll type in text, and I want to use a function. And if I used a function, I could type in text, and then what do I do? Well, in this case, I'm not going to do anything. I don't want to put the text function in this event handler. I want to put my text in a method. What I've done earlier is I created some general text values that I can insert into my design, into my code area. So now what I'm going to do is create a function called sillyInt. Silly Wabbit. This would be incorrect for what we want to do. I'll make some changes. First of all, I want to do void. Public void means that this will return no value. Next, I want to make a change. So in my function with the variable, text, I'm going to change that, set it equal to. Now I need to convert my Wabbit color to string. Currently, it's an integer. And you can see the variable is showing up here. And I'll click on it. Hit close parentheses and semicolon. Now I move back to the button function, and I'm going to call my silly wabbit. So now I say silly wabbit. And I can create a variable. I don't have to call it wabbit color. I'll simply call it text color, text box color. Now you can't use text box specifically because That's a keyword and is a reserved keyword. Also, I need to declare this variable. So let me go ahead and declare it outside of here. Now I don't have to type in it, I could have selected it. Once I've done that, I'll pass 5 to here, and we'll use that in a case statement, a select statement or a switch statement in C sharp in just a minute. But let's go ahead and see what happens when we click on this function. Okay, now if I click on function, I should see a 5 show up over here and use this function. Indeed, I do. Now what I can do is I can also change the color by setting up a switch. Now there's a couple ways I can do a switch. Visual Studio attempts to help by giving me the keyword switch. There's another way that I can do it as well. I can do insert code snippet. Now you can create your own code snippets, and I often do when I'm busy. And that's very useful. Now, the handy thing about it is that this gives me a structure, whereas if I just type in the word switch, I don't have the structure for my code. Now I can use my structure. I'm going to use my switch. I'm going to test Wabbit color. And so I can do case 1, break, case 2, oops, what's wrong here? It's expecting a colon and a semicolon. Case 2, colon. Notice it's making our little work day a little easier. So what we're doing is we're testing for different integers. I could use my default, but I'm not going to. I'm going to just knock it off. Default's important, but I'm not going to use it today. Now I can set my back color. To a certain color. So for one, I'll choose brown. Quite a few shades of brown. And to save some time, I'm going to select and cut and paste. My function. I'll go back in and select the color in just a second. Now, if we run the code, there's an error. As we would expect, I missed a semicolon. Aqua color for the back color and the number 5. It's not returning a variable, it's simply showing me what that number is via this process here. We pass the wabbit color, and now we use it. We convert the integer to a string and pass it to the text. What I'm going to do now is set up debugging. Debugging is very important. So now I'm going to go ahead and set the debugger by going to this gray margin over here on the side and clicking on it, and a red dot shows up, and this is my breakpoint. So now what I'm going to do is go up here and run. My program runs, and then when I click on function, I go to my breakpoint, and this is where we're calling the method. I'll press F11. Okay, and now if we look at what wabbit color is, it's 5. Wabbit color still 5. And so now we should press F5 and continue through our program. It steps through the other ones to 5 and sets the color as aqua. Goes through, hits break, breaks out of the switch, heads back to my program, and closes the program. Okay, so now we have achieved the debugging and stepping through programs, and let's go ahead and close that. And now what we want to do is come down here and, using a variation of our current program, what we're going to do is we're going to stop our program, stop our debugging. I just missed it. Looks like it stopped anyway. And now I'm going to go to here, and now I can return a value from here. And what I can do is, since I called wabbit color, I can return wabbit color if I set up this function as an integer, not a void. And what that squiggle says is that not all code paths return a value. Let's take a look at that. Oops. Now I can make modifications to the wabbit color in my program, and the way that we could do it is we could make a simple change so that we can see that it's changed and how it changed. So I can go wabbit color equals wabbit color times 1000 semicolon, and now I can repeat this process multiple number of times in our case statement, and then when it comes back we can see that the change has been made. So this is an example of using a function and returning the function to the calling event handler or calling function. This is an important process in software architecture to be able to do this. Otherwise, you'd be writing a lot of functions that were untested. You can test these, and functions that are reusable so that you don't have to pay for extra coders. And now we're going to go ahead and run our program, and we'll step through it. Okay, so we start here. I'm pressing F11. We go up to the silly Wabbit. We've passed in the rabbit color, which Wabbit color, which is 5. And now we test. We're going to hit the switch on our Wabbit color, and so we should drop down to 5. We're going to change the text box to back color to color aqua. And now we're also changing the value of the Wabbit color to 5,000. 25,000, because it's 5 times 5,000. We'll break out of the switch. Now let's take a look at the value of Wabbit color. It's 25,000. This hover process is one way of testing your applications very quickly to make sure that the values were what you were expected. It may seem obvious in this one, but there is many times when this is an important way to quickly see if your values are what you expected. Pressing F11 again and again. And again. Now we go to Silly Wabbit. We break out of this, and our form shows up, and it doesn't show us 25,000. Why is that? Let's take a look at our code. Even though we return text box color, the function was modified in the case statement at this point. The value Wabbit color was placed in text function here. Wabbit color at this point is 5, not 25,000. So the best thing we could do would be to take this piece, not do that. It's a very fast mouse. I'm going to have to slow it down. Now you can't change code while it's running, at least not in C sharp. Can in Visual Basic. So we'll cut this. Move down to our event handler here. Make a quick change here. Now text color has changed to is changed, so we need to change this variable and let's go ahead and run it. I'm going to turn the debugger off so we can save a few minutes. We've walked through this and used this for debugging and it's still showing 5. Why is that? Well, maybe we should run our debugger. Let's go ahead and run the debug. That's because text color hasn't been changed. Let's try something here. Yeah, let's go ahead and take our debugger off because I have a feeling this will work correctly. Sure enough, there's our 25,000. Now what's happened and what I did wrong initially was I used text box color. Well, text box color is 5. But when the value is returned by this calling function, it's changed to 25,000. Now what we can do is we can comment this line out. Now we could type using the backslash backslash on the keyboard, or we could do multiple lines of commenting by clicking on this button here, and that allows me to comment, and I could select multiple lines and use that to select and comment code. Now we're going to get the same solution with or without this, Because we didn't need this line, we need this line. Or we set this into a value and then say convert to string that value. We would need two variables to do that. It's really a selection of that you would make as an architect, which way to go. This is a little long. This would be shorter to set it into a value and then take the value and put it here and convert it. Everything's resources and profiling, and that's something that would come at another time. So in this session, we've discussed how to use functions that do not return values. We've passed values from an event handler to a function that doesn't return values, and then we've also modified the function so that it could return values. We made that modification by changing void to a data declaration and added the return statement down here using a variable, using the declarated variable here. I hope this has been helpful, and please let me know by contacting me at sstokes@microsoft.com. We type that here. And thank you very much. Have a good day. In creating functions, one of the things you should keep in mind is that you don't want to clutter up a class with a great number of functions. This makes it difficult to maintain. Although this will happen from time to time as functions and classes age, but to keep the class structure small, you can call functions from other classes. To do this, you need to declare or instantiate the new class. Now, to preserve memory and keep your programs running in an efficient manner, you only want to instantiate the class when it's needed. We'll talk about this briefly in this video. And then in later videos, we'll cover it in more depth. Now you can see we're using our function that we created early in this video, the Wabbit color and so forth. And now what we're going to do is go over and create a new class. To create a new class, I would right-click on RioHondo, this solution, go down to Add, Add New Item, and add a class. I would give it a name, something simple. Call it the Multi class. Now, there's a reason why I did that. So we'll click on Add. And we'll notice that the namespace is still RioHondo CC. And now the class is MultiMulti. What we want to do is add a function. I've created a couple of functions in another class. I'm going to go over and copy them. One of the classes I created was NoReturnMultiple. And then I also created another class called HandyMultiple. Now, quite often you'll need to do certain arithmetic functions, and in doing so, you'll want to create some classes to do the arithmetic. So let's go to MultiMulti CS, and now I'll add the functions. Now we'll go over creation of the functions in my next video, but for now, let's paste this in. We now have two classes in our two functions in our class. Now I want to use this in my program. So I'm going to go over to the form and I'll go to the designer, which just holds my code. Let's try that again. Go into the designer, which holds my code, and down here I've added two classes and then commented them out. Now, this is a problem that can happen quite often, so we're going to back into this. And you have similar named functions. I have the class demo and the multi-multi, and they both do pretty much the same thing. In fact, they do the exact same thing. But now what I'm going to do is I'm going to change my class demo multi to be a multi-multi. Now this may seem a little confusing, but we're simply creating a memory location for our class. Like a string, we create a string variable. We also can create class variables. And basically, what we're doing here is creating a class variable. So now I'm going to call this arithmetic. Multiple, let's call it multiple evaluation. Kind of long, but there you go. Now, what we can do, this is the multi-multi class, and now that I've created a new function, let's real quick, I just realized I typed that in. Old habits die hard. And here's the class. Now, remember, I also have the class demo. Let's see if that shows up. So yes, the class demo also shows up. Does basically the same thing, but we'll stick with the multi-multi. Now there are some things about object-oriented programming that you need to be careful about. But right now, we'll just assume that life is good and we don't have to worry about anything. So now we have our multi-multi, and we're going to go down here and notice I now have a red squiggle where I didn't have before. I'm going to go here and type in multiple. We go. And you'll see that I have handy multiple and no return multiple, which are the two variables I just evaluated. So I'm simply going to hit delete and bring my handy multiple, which has a variable or a value that I'm going to ship over to that class. And I probably don't want this here in the button null function, which would be confusing. So let me remove that. And now we'll come down to my button function, which is a little further down here. And I'll go ahead and pop this in here. I'll pop this in here. And because I'm cutting and pasting, you don't see that when I hit the period, handy multiply is indeed there. If you hit the period and your function or variable or property that you're expecting to see isn't there, that means that you need to go and fix your constructor. It's probably a problem with your constructor. Now here we change the name of the constructor. There is a way for it to do a uniform replacement, but we didn't do it to do that. So here's the multiple. I typed it in. Let's see if it really works. We can see that in 2010 we get that little halo effect, and there's the no multiple, no return multiple. So now I'll push that over. Hit the period, and you can see that that's there. And I'm going to pass a 5 to the no return multiple. Now, real quick, let's see what happens when I run this code. Ooh, I get errors. Okay, let's see what happened. Forgot a parentheses. Here it is. Need a parentheses over here. That's a fairly common error. Go back to my error list. That's a warning. Warnings should be taken care of. They should be treated like errors. In this case, I'm just simply going to comment the silly out, the silly thing out, and invalid expression. There's my missing parentheses and extra semicolon. And Because I cut pasted, that's why the second one came into existence. Okay, so we've done some troubleshooting. We used the error list to evaluate our problems. Now I'm going to go ahead and run this. When I hit function, I'll see 25,000 here, but I'll also see the number 18, maybe a higher number, but I'll see this uses function will change to a number 24. It's a multiple of 6. That's not a great way to demo things, but that shows you that that function worked. And so now what we'll do is we'll go through and do a step-by-step process. We're still running, so I need to turn off my running. No, wait a minute. No, we're not. Okay, so I should be able to set my debugger here. There we go. Breakpoint. Insert breakpoint. Okay. Now I'll go ahead and run this. We'll break at that line. I'll hit function. Now what we're going to do is we're going to step over to a separate function by pressing F11. And now we're in another class. We're not in the same class for the form, we're in a separate class. This is always a good idea to move as much of your functionality out of your forms and into classes that you can reuse. And you can see we're going through the integers and it's going to do a multiply. And the multiply is 5 times 6, so silly should equal. So it's 5 times 6. But silly equals 9. We haven't stepped through this. So once it goes here, silly will switch to 30. And there it is. Silly is equal to 30. Pressing F11, we'll go back to the initial event function. And now we're going to go to where we're changing the label uses function. And now we're going over to handy multiply. Int vector equals 6. Now you can see that cd multiply still equals 4, which is what we sent over to this function. We transmitted that through this variable memory location. And now we're going to hit F11. We're going to return cd multiple back to the calling function. And now we're going to move through the event handler, and we have completed. Here's our 24 in the label, 25,000, which we evaluated earlier. I'm going to close this form. And so what we've seen so far is that we've been able to call a function in another class. What this means is that the form. You're able to take a lot of this code out and simply use it to call functions. And the functions are stored in other classes that are not associated with the form. This would allow you to share these classes directly without sharing the form. In review, functions that don't return values use the term void. An example is public void silly wabbit int wabbit color. Now remember, the int wabbit color is the variable that's being passed into the function silly wabbit. That's then used by that function. Functions that return values are treated like variables. You need to give the function a name. Give the function name a data type. In this case, public int silly wabbit and pass the wabbit color into the function. If you call functions from another class, you have to construct the memory location for the class by using the new keyword. In this case, you would construct or instantiate the class demo multi-multi by setting it equal to class demo. In this case, you're using the pattern created by class demo to build or instantiate a new class called MultiMulti, which is a memory location or locations that contain the pattern defined by class demo. I hope you found this useful, and come back and take a look at my videos. In the future, we'll be covering more about class constructions, as well as using DLLs, interfaces, and so forth.